Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Your understanding of what the power balance was going to be between those two guys who got six-year deals, has it changed in any way leading up to, like, today?
No. Kyle's in charge.
So you thought all along Kyle's, the buck stops there.
They said that.
Okay.
Didn't they? I mean, they basically told us.
So why wouldn't
Kyle hire John, more or less?
Why wouldn't he address the glaring need at safety that we all see? Because it seemed, they seemed to address a lot of the needs that we all saw they had, which is why 49ers fans should be heartened. It's like the first step to getting better is acknowledging where you stink. And I thought they at least acknowledged, they showed the fans, look, yeah, we see it too. And they were able to sign or trade some guys that addressed those needs. And some of the guys they struck out on in attempts to address other needs. But again, going back to this, we're not the only people that think they need help at safety. And that's the one position that we didn't really hear a whole lot of rumors, not that they were involved with anything.
510 Texter, I think, nailed the Niners' feelings on Jimmy Ward. 510. Maybe the Niners are hoping Jimmy Ward will turn out to be a Merton Hanks situation, a converted corner becoming a rangy free safety who can play at a high level.
See, I've heard that about Richard Sherman.
They may think Sherman is eventually a safety. They may think Ward can play at a high level if he's focused on safety and not bouncing all over the field. They may want to go back to Adrian Colbert. They may have liked what they saw from DJ Reed and Marcel Harris. I don't know. I know that what they do have is a ton of youth in the defensive backfield. A lot of guys who might eventually be starters. None of them are now, because we saw Witherspoon last year. So their ideal starting corner situation, in my mind, is Sherman and Verrett. We'll see if Verrett can get healthy. Mm. I don't know what their ideal safety tandem is. And that's part of the confusion for me here. Is it Jimmy Ward and Jaquaski Tart? Is it Tart and Colbert? Is it one of the younger guys like Harris or Reed, or that they just re-signed Anton Exum? I don't know what their plan with safety is. And that is because when I look at their safeties, I see nobody really great. Just there's no one guy I totally trust. Jaquaski Tart's a fine player.
I was just going to say, give me your general thoughts on Jaquaski Tart.
He's a strong safety and he hits. That's all good. Right? Those are positives.
Yeah, the coaching staff seems to be really high on
it. Yeah. I don't. But he's not a guy where, you know what? Put whoever you want next to Jaquaski Tart and you're going to be fine back there. Mm-hmm. Like, he's an NFL starter. He's not a Pro Bowler. Which is fine. But to me, you've got
not room to grow
one NFL
into?
Starter. Maybe. Tart's not the problem to me. The problem is everything other than Tart is Jimmy Ward and young guys that we're just not sure if they're actually good. Mm-hmm. Colbert, bad start to last year after a great finish to the previous year. Maybe he's back to the way he finished his rookie year. Maybe he looks like last year. It's really hard to predict. DJ Reed and Marcel Harris, young guys who looked talented at moments during the last three or four games of last season. Guys, I'm comfortable being regular parts of my safety pair. I just don't know. And the problem is, because of where they're at in the GM coach cycle, because we're putting all this pressure on year three of the Lynch and Shanahan thing, I'm not sure you can afford to be in a position for the second straight year where, like, no, I mean, we're going to try Colbert and see how that works. And if it doesn't, no, we're going to try Marcel Harris and see how that works. And then we're going to try it. No, I'd like to have Earl Thomas there, even if it did cost a little extra. That's my problem with what they've done at safety.
I think Richard Sherman might have the same problem. Because he wants him some Earl Thomas. That is very, very clear.
Yeah. Well, he at least thought it would be good enough that he said something.
Yeah.
We have really no idea how hard he pushed behind the scenes. But, of course, look, if you're Richard Sherman, don't you want one of the best safeties of all time covering your back again? Of course you do.
Absolutely.
And I also think just someone like Earl Thomas would have been so good for all these guys like DJ Reed and Marcel Harris and Adrian Colbert, who hopefully one day will be good. And what did the Ravens end up giving Earl? Someone pull up that deal for me. Because I don't feel like it was so exorbitant. It was less than Landon Collins got. I know that. So I would have made that investment. I would still make that investment in Trey Boston because I think they need that. But to their point, you shore up linebacker, you add more pass rush, it definitely makes the job easier for the guys on the back end, and maybe that's what they're counting on. As 925 Texter just said it, the secondary is going to look a whole lot better with Bosa, Buckner, and Ford all over the QB. Now, we don't know if they have Bosa for sure, but right, we do expect them to add some pass rusher in the top 10 or so of the draft, even if they trade down.
I got the contract.
Okay.
Want to hear it? Earl Thomas. 4 years, $55 million, including a $20 million signing bonus. $32 million of that money is guaranteed, and an average annual salary of $13,750,000 in 2019. He'll earn a base salary of $2 million and a signing bonus of $20 million while carrying a cap hit of $7 million and a dead cap value at $32 million. Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot to digest.
Yeah, you said a lot of words just then, and some of them connected with my brain.
And as I was saying them, all I heard was Charlie Brown's teacher. Just That's me with numbers.
Give me the overall number again.
$55 million over 4 years, 32 guaranteed.
There you go.
That's all you really need to know.
So right? It is 4 years, and that is a little long. But, you know, you're talking $8 million a year guaranteed. And I imagine the way the Niners do deals with Parag on that thing, it would have been front loaded. So you probably could have moved on after two or three. I think the effect of having Earl Thomas both on the field and on the young players around him would have been invaluable for those 2 years. I really do. I really do. And if you're the Niners, it sure seems like you believe that sort of mentorship matters because that's what you told us when you signed Richard Sherman.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're playing that system and you're telling me Richard Sherman gives you some veteran experience that helps the younger players, isn't Earl Thomas that and more? Because he's also younger than Richard Sherman and, frankly, was better at his position. As great as Richard Sherman was, Earl Thomas is one of the five best safeties ever. Like, that's the rarefied air Earl Thomas walks in. Richard Sherman is a Pro Bowl corner, possible Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like if Dion was out there.
Right.
That's who Earl Thomas is.
Do you think Richard Sherman can't, based on what you know of his skill set and whether it's declined or not in the wake of the injury, could he be a safety?
You know, I don't.
That's it.
I'd be making it up. I think he can. I could give you some reasons why I think he can, but I'd be making it up. I don't study the positions closely enough to really give you a really good answer to that question.
It seems like anybody who I hear suggesting that, and first off, they suggest it and they make it sound like it's really not that big of a deal. Well, it is a big deal. It's corner and safety are two very different positions. And so whenever I hear someone say, well, they can just convert him to safety, it reminds me of a little league coach hiding some kid in right field.
Well, I think here's part of
safety
the thought.
Safety is not something you hide people at.
Yeah, I think part of the thought process is as he slows down a little, a huge portion of a free safety's job these days is tracking tight ends. Mm-hmm. And if he's so good at covering, but he can't quite keep up with wide receivers anymore, can he keep up with tight ends and still provide you a guy who's in the right place all the time and is not as outmatched cover-wise with the dudes he's dealing with? Mm-hmm. I think that's the theory. Again, I'd be making it up if I told you how well I thought that would actually work. It seems reasonable, but I don't know. We'll find out. Speaking of finding out, where are we? We're like a month now from finding out what happens with the number two overall pick in the National Football League draft. Here's my question to the people, to the Niners fans. Would you rather go Kyler Murray number one so that the Niners have their pick of all the edge rushers? Or would you rather either Nick Bosa or Quinnen Williams goes first overall, and then the Niners have the opportunity to trade down with a quarterback-hungry team that wants to get up and get Kyler Murray? So I guess the question sort of comes down to, how attached are you to specifically Nick Bosa? Or do you feel like I'd rather have any one of these five top 10 pass rushers and then extra assets as well? I'll get your answer when we get back, Michael Urban. We'll also get answers from the people. The Chilton Auto Body text line, 95795. The phone number, 888-957-9570. How do you want the draft to play out? Are the Niners in better shape if Nick Bosa falls to them, or if the opportunity to trade Kyler Murray falls to them? I'm Matt Kolsky. He's Michael Urban on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Kolsky and Urban.
I thought we were for sure going Tupac. I for sure thought Tupac.
It's not often you stop Mr. Kolsky in his tracks. That's what we just saw in the studio.
Double stopped in my tracks because not only did they pull Rogers Hornsby, you said? I don't even know who the original is. I only know Changes. All I see is Changes.
What is the guy's name, his full name? I think we're mixing him in
it's
with
Bruce,
the Hall of Famer.
Not Rogers, from the baseball player. Bruce, yeah. Who played piano with the Grateful Dead, among others.
And guess who he mentored and still to this day tries to mentor? It's crazy. You'd probably never guess
it's probably
it.
Probably not crazy, so I want to guess it. But we don't have time for this because in addition to producing up some Bruce Hornsby, Gabe produced up football expert, I tell you, Matt Barrows. And I believe he's on the line right now. Ah, look at that. That's professional work. Matt Barrows joins us right this minute. What's up, Matt?
Bruce Hornsby in the range. I'm
there you go.
Very familiar with Bruce Hornsby.
There we go.
And you're dying to hear who he mentored. Okay,
all right,
I'll
go
tell
ahead.
You
go
then.
Ahead, Herbs. Fine.
Allen Iverson.
What?
Yeah. He paid all his legal fees for that bowling alley brawl.
No kidding.
Yeah, he ended up like their lifelong buddies. Thunder buddies.
That is. You're right. That is not at all what I expected.
Bruce
okay.
Hornsby used to appear in what we used to call the blue-orange game at UVA, and it was like a early season basketball game before things got serious, and he would be one of the celebrity guys, and Woody Harrelson would be the other one.
Oh, my goodness.
And they would play basketball with the players on the varsity team. So he's a big basketball guy, and he's from Virginia, and that's the tie-in to Allen Iverson, who's
Newport
also
News.
Virginia.
This
yes, exactly.
is this is phenomenal Bruce Hornsby knowledge from both of you. I am very impressed, and also I'll just say, had I been at UVA, I would have been more interested in the post-game activities of Hornsby and Harrelson than actually watching that basketball game. But that's just me. That's just me speaking for myself. Let's talk 49ers before I get thrown off the radio forever. Matt Barrows joins us, and I want to ask you, because this is turning into my pet peeve of the Niners offseason, I've talked myself into almost everything here. I like the defensive contracts they've signed. They seem like reasonable value to me. I like the trade for Dee Ford. I like some of the under-the-radar things that they did. I think Tevin Coleman is a savvy signing. I can't live with the safety situation, and I can't understand why they didn't either A, pony up for Earl Thomas, or why not go get someone like Trey Boston right now?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It seems like it's a position that they didn't take very seriously back in 2017, and then last year not so much either, and you would have thought that they would have learned over the last couple of years, okay, this is the year we've got to make a commitment to this spot, because it's a critical part of this defense, and they're still kind of going with the bargain basement deal here with Jimmy Ward and Adrian Colbert as the two guys who likely will be competing for that spot throughout the offseason. Maybe they use a higher draft pick there, but, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's a spot where a young guy could come in and be great right away. I mean, it's a lot of it is instinct, and, you know, Earl Thomas wasn't quite Earl Thomas the first couple of years in the league. He sort of grew into that role and then became sort of the archetype of that single high free safety. So I agree with you. I'm not exactly sure what the rationale is for going big at other positions and not free safety. Maybe they think that, you know, once they shore up these edge rusher positions, the free safety spot will become a little bit better, because of all that. But you're right. It does sort of jut out as a spot that they haven't really seriously addressed.
And it's unusual because Mr. Kolsky asked me earlier in the program how I felt in general about what the Niners have been doing in the offseason. And I said, look, the first thing I want to know as a fan is, does management see the same problems that I see? And if they do, are they addressing it? It seems like, I mean, there are a lot of needs, and they addressed or tried to address a lot of them, which is what makes not addressing the safety position so glaring. Because I feel like they were realistic, they were self-aware, they knew what a lot of their problems are. Do they seriously not think they have a problem at safety?
I think they do. Obviously, they started five different guys there last year. It may have been a case where they went into the offseason thinking, okay, let's get in the running for Earl Thomas, and they quickly realized that they didn't want to pay that amount for a guy who was going to be 30 very soon. So that's probably part of it. Obviously, Richard Sherman thought that the 49ers were going to be in the running. He was talking Thomas up to us as late as late February over at the scouting combine. So again, it may be just something where they decided, okay, let's take care of A, B, and C, and we'll just kind of kick D down the road a little bit.
Yeah, and I hadn't even thought of this, but a texter just pointed out, of all positions, for John Lynch to sort of strangely not seem to value, it's particularly bizarre. I want to ask about the other side now, though, because when I asked the question of the audience, what's the spot they didn't fill that you really wanted filled, I think the answer, not too surprisingly, is top wideout. And I think some of that is, obviously, Kendrick Bourne was their leading wide receiver last year, which is not great. Some of that is the fact that there were rumors of them getting two of arguably the top, what, five receivers in the league, and neither of those panned out. But I do wonder, and sort of two parts here. One is whether there's still a trade out there for them. A.J. Green and Julio Jones have both been mentioned. I don't know whether either is available. But in my view, this is kind of, we talk about players betting on themselves sometimes, signing a one-year deal to try to prove they're worth something. And contractually, that's not this. But philosophically, I feel like this is kind of Shanahan and Lynch betting on Kyle Shanahan and saying, as long as we have a diverse set of weapons and a competent quarterback, we'll take care of the offense. We'll cover that. It's defense where we need to bring in extra talent. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Shanahan obviously has confidence in himself to scheme these guys open. He's very particular when it comes to wide receivers. He does not want to overpay for a receiver that he considers just a guy. So there's a very stringent type that he's looking for, and when he doesn't see that, he's not going to get in the game. And frankly, there weren't a lot of really good wide receivers in free agency, and that's the reason why, you know, they or these other teams didn't jump in. Odell Beckham is very interesting. I mean, they were obviously interested in adding him. I'd love to kind of hear the details of what they offered. Remember with Khalil Mack, they implied very heavily that they thought that their final offer was better than the Bears was, and they couldn't quite understand why the Raiders sent Mack to Chicago. It may come down to a similar case with the Giants and Odell Beckham, that the Giants really wanted Beckham in the AFC, and in so doing, accepted a lesser deal than they were getting from perhaps an NFC team like the 49ers. We still don't know that, but that's the suspicion, because Beckham is one of those guys that Shanahan would have overpaid for, would have gone out of his way to get, because he realizes that he is special. He is that elite wide receiver that he had in Atlanta with Julio Jones, and that are very, very hard to come by.
Hey, Matt, did the Tevin Coleman signing, that kind of, it seemed like a lot of insiders were surprised at it, that they would go address that position, because you signed a guy last offseason that you said was perfect for the system, and obviously he's hurt. Is this just an insurance move?
Yeah, I think it was a case where they saw a bargain that they couldn't turn down. It's not a glaring need, or at least not as glaring as wide receiver and edge rusher was for them, but they realized that it was a depressed market for running backs. Coleman, obviously, is somebody that Shanahan liked. They took him in the third round when Shanahan was in Atlanta. And, you know, the last part of that is that McKinnon is perfect for this offense. He is, however, coming off an ACL. And I think there's real concern, but an acceptance that running backs take a while to come back from that injury, and that Jerick McKinnon on September 9 or whatever the first day of the season is, isn't going to be back at full strength. It might take him half the season to kind of get back to where he was prior to the injury. So they're going to need him. They're going to need Coleman in the lineup. They're going to need Matt Breida. You know, now they've got a nice arsenal of running backs to go into the season with.
Yeah, and almost all of them can split out and catch a pass for you if you want them to. Matt Barrows of The Athletic joining us for some Niners talk. And when they signed Kwon Alexander, and the headline reads, biggest contract ever for an inside linebacker, a lot of 49er fans freaked out, understandably, I think. But as we see other guys sign, like C.J. Mosley and the numbers he's getting, and as we find out, actually, he's guaranteed basically just this year and $3 million after this year, it suddenly looks like a good deal. And I'm wondering, just in terms of the football side of it, is it? I know we just said an ACL is a concern for McKinnon, but it also feels like usually an ACL is a 9-month injury, and maybe we shouldn't be too worried about it. So how much do we need to worry about Kwon Alexander's knee? And then, assuming his knee's okay, how good can he be? Because he's a very young guy with a Pro Bowl on his resume.
Yeah, when he's 100% healthy, he's excellent. He's exactly what you want in the middle of that defense, which is somebody who can run. And they're going to be moving to more of this wide nine stuff, which is great as far as applying pressure from the edges, but it does open up your middle a little bit more, and so you really need to have a couple of good inside linebackers, and Kwon Alexander, when healthy, is that. But I don't think that he should ever, especially this franchise that has just had such bad luck with ACLs over the last decade. It's still a serious injury, and you know, Kwon Alexander is well on his way to his recovery. He's ahead of schedule, however you want to put it. But it's a risk when you're talking about that particular injury and how long it takes a guy to get back. So, you know, everybody right now is saying, we've gone from this was a terrible deal to this is the greatest contract ever. Well, it's a great contract because the guy, it's not a slam dunk because of his ACL. So you're using the riskiness of that to kind of gain leverage on the contract. So it all kind of is tied together. I'm not exactly sure when he's going to be on the field. He danced around that during his introductory press conference a few days ago. I think that they hope
a day at a time, Matt. It's just a day at a time, is what he's.
Yeah, exactly. So you know where he is on September 9 again. I'm not exactly sure. It could very well be a situation where it's like McKinnon, that he's not quite back to being himself until mid October.
Matt, there's several ways to fix a problem, to address a weakness. One of the Niners' weaknesses has been in the red zone. Is that a product of Shanahan can't scheme people open as easily in the red zone because there's less room? Or do they truly need to go out and get a big red zone target? Is it that easy of a fix, I guess?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that there is something to be said about Shanahan's scheme and the red zone. I mean, this is a scheme that relies on space.
Mm-hmm.
And the closer you get to the goal line, that space disappears. It's also a scheme that relies on, smaller players. Look at their running backs. They're all around 200 pounds. The offensive line is lighter than a typical offensive line. The wide receivers are smaller than a typical wide receiving crew. So, like I said, the closer you get in to that goal line, the less space you have and the more you have to rely on power. And they just don't have that as much as they did, say, under Jim Harbaugh. So having a bigger receiver, I think, is going to help some. But, I don't think it really cures the general ill that is affecting them when it comes to their red zone issues.
Matt Barrows, who covers the 49ers for The Athletic, joining us right now on 95.7 The Game. And obviously the draft, a big deal for the Niners, picking second overall as of now. But my big question heading into this, and I'll ask you both from what you know about how they're scouting the draft and doing business and also just what you think. Do you think the Niners are in better position if Kyler Murray goes first overall and they have the option to take Nick Bosa, or if, Bosa or Quinnen Williams go first overall and they have the option to trade down to a team that's after Kyler Murray?
My take is that they like Bosa probably out of all these guys the most, but having Dee Ford in the fold now gives them some flexibility that if they got a really good, if Bosa's sitting there at two and they got a really good offer to trade down, let's say the Giants still want to kind of come up and get Dwayne Haskins at pick number two, and they offer the 49ers, now New York has two first-round picks. Let's say they offer pick number six and pick number 17 to get up to pick number two. I think now you at least are listening to that because pass rusher isn't quite as a big of a problem as it was pre-Dee Ford. My guess is that they still would take Bosa in that scenario, but like I said, it gives them more wiggle room to perhaps get extra picks.
Matt Barrows, ladies and gentlemen, read his work in The Athletic. Thank you so much for joining us on short notice, Matt. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt.
No problem. Nice talking to you guys.
Matty B. Once again, read him on The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter. Excellent 49ers coverage. And I think everything he said is about where I expected. And I remain not baffled, but less than totally
vexed, flummoxed.
That feels strong. All those words feel very strong. I'm not. Here's the thing about this. Like we've said already today, Jaquaski Tartt is fine. It's probably above average, maybe even.
He's all right.
Right? He's in there. Good for him. But the other safety position, it's essentially the same approach you had last year that definitely didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it comes down to for me. A year further into the regime for Shanahan and Lynch, the money is there to shore up that position. And it's almost like last year you went in thinking, well, we got a lot of different young guys that might be able to compete and be part of this safety rotation. And they all did, and none of them got the job done.
Right.
and now you're doing it again. That, to me, is where I start to wonder if you're learning from your mistakes.
It's the whole insanity thing, right?
Right, right. Are you doing the same thing, expecting different results? And I understand to a degree, well, look, the results we got last time were injuries, which are not, you know, we're not going to expect injuries. And we still think if these guys are healthy, they can do this. But, oof, 1 year, I'm willing to ride that gamble out with you. When you lose the gamble, I don't know that I can double down with you.
I don't think you are at all. I think you've already made up your mind. You're not doubling down with
me. No, I'm not. I am leaving the door open, though. Because, like I said, Trey Boston's still out there.
Right.
And
maybe they're...
Also, like I said, I did like what I saw from Adrian Colbert in his rookie year, from Marcel Harris at times last year, right? Jimmy Ward drives me nuts, but he's also been a fine player over certain stretches of his 4 or 5 years in the NFL. And can I say for sure Jimmy Ward won't? Like, there are players I can tell you can't play, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I've watched enough Bears and Niners and Raiders football over the last 5 years. I've seen a lot of dudes who can't play. I know what that looks like. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you for sure Jimmy Ward can't play. I'll tell you Jimmy Ward has made a lot of mistakes. I'll tell you Jimmy Ward has been shuffled all over the field at various times, and I don't think that's helped him. Is it possible that a safety pairing of Tart and Ward, if you end up with Richard Sherman and Jason Verrett as your corners, is it possible that'll be perfectly fine? Yeah. But if you have the opportunity to put it into a situation where I'm like, oh, now that's good.
It seems like they have a lot of faith in Jimmy Ward, right?
I guess so.
If they're going to give him... I mean,
it's not the money. It's the lack of signing another option.
Yeah, and they're thinking that this guy... They must be, like, blown away by the guy's athleticism and his ability to pick up concepts, right? Because if you're thinking, okay... That didn't work so well last year, but we're going to do the same thing. He just needs a little bit more time. That tells me coaching staff has fallen in love with a player for whatever reason, and it's going to take something really dramatic for them to fall out of love. You know, I was half kidding when I said it earlier, but Derek Barton, you know?
Did you hear that the other day? Or were you the one who suggested that to me the other day?
When? About what?
Is this the first time you've ever made a Derek Barton, Jimmy Ward comparison?
Yes.
Someone texted this. I think it was someone texted it directly to me.
Really?
When Damon and I were talking about it. Yeah. It might have been on the text line, though. Yeah. Jimmy Ward is Derek Barton. It's the best analogy I've ever heard.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
He's the guy who, first round draft pick, right?
Uh-huh.
He's supposed to come in and be good, and not only good, but... New agey,
yeah, yeah.
Safety, corner, flexible, some nickel. He can do it all.
He does it different, and it's special.
Right. And 5 years later, we're still waiting for it, and the team is still in love with him. That is vexing.
The only difference is that Jimmy Ward's not playing in a Mexican league somewhere, because that's where Derek Barton ended up.
Yet. Do not... Do not rule out.
Well, hey, the NFL insists on playing in Mexico City every year. Maybe they're.
I was going to say, do not. I was going to say, do not rule out seeing Jimmy Ward on a football field exactly 1 year from today. If you catch my drift.
With the Alliance,
415 texter said the Solomon Thomas situation is a little different than someone who can't play. I'm going to give him half the season to see if his heart is back into it, or if it's just too much at the next level. I think there is a better than 20% odds that Solomon Thomas is going to make a lot of people eat their words. It's easy for us to forget the effect that personal has on professional when it comes to athletes.
Mm-hmm.
This is a kid in his early 20s who has been through emotional hell.
Yeah.
And I'm not telling you he's going to have a 15-sack season, but I do not think it's out of the question that he comes out and looks like a first-round pick this year. I don't think that's out of the question at all. 925 says, put some respect on Derek Barton's name. He has the same batting average as Chris Davis. Yes, but way fewer home runs. Way, way fewer. That's the problem. Nobody would have any lack of respect for Derek Barton if he had been hitting 40-plus homers a year.
Chris Davis hits 43 home runs a year. Derek Barton didn't hit 43 home runs over the course of 162 batting practice sessions.
Derek Barton.
But he did walk into... Did I tell you...
I mean, I think that person's probably joking, but I do like the idea that we just somehow triggered the one remaining Derek Barton fan in the Bay Area.
Yeah. Well, it might be Billy Bean with his burner account.
Oh.
Did I tell you how Derek Barton made
his
debut?
Former A's beat writer Michael Urban, are you saying Billy Bean has burners?
No, I'm saying Billy Bean loved
Derek Barton. Former A's insider?
How about this?
Michael Urban?
Here's how Derek Barton introduced himself.
Denizen of A's locker rooms? Sorry, all right.
Are you done?
Yes.
Here's how Derek Barton announced his presence with authority, since we've already gone.
A hard ground ball down the right field line?
No, he walked into the clubhouse. Remember, this is a clubhouse that has David Justice was on the team at the time. I think Jermaine Dye was still there. There were sage, wily veterans, guys who'd been around the block a number of times.
A regular
right?
baseball edition of the Hamptons Five.
Okay, exactly. And here comes Derek Barton. He got called up because the roster's expanded in September. We're in Seattle. It's a night game. The clubhouse is inside. They're not that one team that has an outdoor clubhouse. Their clubhouse is inside. Derek Barton comes walking through the doors wearing board shorts, a tank top, and sunglasses with white frames.
Why is this not a scene in Moneyball somehow?
Thank you. That's what I was wondering. It was like the record scratch in the whole room stops. I mean, this was their. They had been hearing all about Derek Barton, and Derek Barton was the best hitter ever. And he comes walking in with board shorts, a tank top, and white framed sunglasses.
Hey, man.
It was all downhill from there, baby.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Hopefully, it's going to be all uphill the rest of the way for the Golden State Warriors. The last two games, we were told they were statement games. And then they went out and made statements. So where are you at with the Warriors? Because I know there's a few people who always had the faith. But I sit in this chair and read your texts and take your phone calls. And I know how many of you were starting to freak out. So I want to know if you were freaking out a week ago after a loss to Phoenix. How do you feel today, Warriors fans? 888-957-9570 is the phone number. Chilton Auto Body text line, hit us up, 95795. How much has your Warrior confidence level changed in the last 7 days? I'm Matt Kolsky. He's Michael Urban. 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Kolsky and Urban.
We are back. Rocking hard now. No more of this nonsense. I think Joe is just less influenced by Gabe is what's happening in the back room. I'm Matt Kolsky, Michael Urban alongside me. And I want to know. Because don't try to lie to me. I've been here all week. And I know how many of... I've been here all year. I know how many of you were freaking out. I know how much doubt was creeping in to Warrior fans just a week ago. Just about a week ago. You were all paranoid. All right, not all. There were a few never wavering supporters. There were a handful of texters over the week. Never had any concern. Pfft, lost to Phoenix. Who cares? There were a few of you. But I'll admit, I couldn't go full who cares. Probably should have. Couldn't do it. I was a little, I wasn't nervous. Never took him off my, off the top of my finals favorites. But I did find it unpleasant. Is that fair? I found the way things were going to be incorrect. I did not think that's what the Warriors should look like, and I was confused why they persisted in looking that way. So I want to know now, all you freaker outers, 7 days and two basketball games later, how are you feeling? 888-957-9570 is our phone number. The Chilled and Autobody text line 95795. Before we get to the people, Michael Urban, how much were you freaking out a week ago, and how chill are you today?
About the Warriors?
Yeah.
I was angry.
Angry?
I was angry after the loss to the Suns.
Angry at the Warriors?
Yeah, I thought they were being disrespectful to the game.
By not giving enough.
Right. By playing down. When you're so good and you play that far down, that's disrespectful to me.
Yeah, I think I understand bad for ball. That's
bad
a great
ball.
Point. We will have good for ball, bad for ball coming up. I'm going to say about 35, 40 minutes from right now.
By the way, I want to apologize to you for being a few seconds late coming out of the break. But
Magical Radio, Herbs, no one was going to know.
Here's the reward. If we can somehow get...
Is it that you're out of breath because you had to run? I'm assuming you ran back upstairs after paying your meter. No, it's Sunday.
No, I was in doing the coffee.
Oh.
They have cameras all over this place, right?
So there's video of you sprinting?
No, there's video of me taking
hobbling.
A header right in front of the sink.
Oh, no.
I'm wearing flip-flops, and look, in the front of it got, I guess I dragged my foot.
Herbs
and I did
down.
That. I went down hard.
Oh, no.
I want to see that security footage. That's going to be hilarious.
Gabe, can you produce us up some security footage, please? Thank you. We'll see what we can do. Believe me, if we get it, I'm tweeting it. So if I see it, the people see it. That's how this goes.
But I looked up at where I was in relation to the cameras. I might have been in a blind spot. I kind of hope so, because if you get a hold of that video,
it's going to be a good
time.
I'll
never see the end of it.
It's going to be a good time. 925 texter agrees with you. It is disrespectful, especially towards fans with the last year at Oracle.
Mm.
And that's the part that really stuck out to me. And I don't know, but we probably have this somewhere. It sticks out to Steve Kerr, too. Because before the season, they talked about how important it was to close out Oracle in style. During the season, they've talked about not representing at Oracle the way they want to. And specifically after the Phoenix game, Steve Kerr talked about that. And
so did Clay in the weirdest way possible.
And he apologized. But first of all,
Claytheism.
Claytheism, the movement that has taken the NBA by storm.
And also,
living my best life.
So,
we're getting like an old married couple almost.
Sometimes, almost.
You just walked right past that one.
Sometimes, sometimes you say a thing that you shouldn't have said, but I'll tell you one thing. If it's Clay, he'll make it right.
I guarantee that.
He's living his best life.
He is. Oh, great. We do have Steve Kerr specifically addressing that issue.
Perfect.
Something we've discussed the last 2 days. What's our purpose? Why are we doing this? I think we owe it to ourselves. We owe it to our fans, and particularly to our fans in Oakland, to give them our best stuff over the coming months. And it's been lacking, and it's disappointing, but we got a great opportunity ahead of us to close the season strong and to play well and deep into the playoffs, and it's all right there for us.
So since he said that, they've played two good games, one in Houston, one in Oklahoma City. Now, they haven't played at home, so as far as doing it in front of the Oracle crowd, we're still a few games from seeing that, and hopefully we will. But I'm asking you, as a Warrior fan, after those two games, how much better do you feel? Let's go to Reed in Daly City. What's up, Reed?
Hi, Reed.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
Good.
Good. Yeah, well, I'm feeling good now, but I'm a little bit still worried about KD. It seems like the style of play we play without him is much better than the style of play with him. I don't know what's going on with his relationship with Kyrie. I mean, we got killed by Celtics, and he goes and hugs the guy. I'm a little concerned with that. I'd rather have him coming off the bench because that's our weakness. It looks like we're playing great without him on the first team with Cousins. So I'm concerned with him coming back, but we look like the old Warriors without him.
So tell me about the disappointment level. I mean, you think it's like palpable that KD's unhappy?
Yeah. Are you talking about KD or me?
Well, you're clearly unhappy, right?
I'm unhappy with the way he's playing, for sure, and the way he's making us play.
So you think that they play a different style of basketball without KD, and it's a better style of basketball? I think they play the same style.
Well, here's the question. Undoubtedly, a week ago today, the style they were playing with KD looked like trash compared to the style they've played the last two games. The question I would ask you, Reed, is, haven't we also seen them play this style with Kevin Durant in the past?
We have, but I can't remember when, because we've been losing games. I mean, we lost 4 out of 6. I think I called you last week. I said we got to get Bogut. Thank God we did get Bogut.
Well, here's the thing, and thanks for the call, Reed. We appreciate it, because you're right. And this is the thing a lot of Warriors fans have identified over the last week. We know what it looks like when the Warriors play their best style of basketball. And it looks like the last two games, especially last night. That's what it looks like when they play their best style of basketball. But their best basketball is that style with Kevin Durant. And if the question is, when's the last time they played like that with Kevin Durant? I don't know that I can identify the exact stretch, but I'll tell you it was this year. It was certainly the first 11 games they played that way with Durant, right? So we're not talking about a really long time ago.
Well, Reed seems to be suggesting that KD has, I don't know if regressed is the right word, but I do think, look, that KD can get a shot anytime he wants. We've talked about this a number of times on this show. Steve Kerr talks about being the ultimate luxury, right? It's great having a guy who can get his shot at the end of a quarter, at the end of the shot clock, what have you. I'm asking you, Matt, do you think KD is quicker to resort to ISO ball or has played that style more than he has
in the first
2 years with them?
Do you see a lot of plays where KD gets the ball on the wing and guys keep moving and he ignores them and goes ISO?
No. Because if they keep moving, someone's going to be open and he's going to hit him.
Have you ever felt like Kevin Durant was an unwilling passer in his entire Warriors career?
Never.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.